Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Hello, Palate Exposure, Ilona Thompson, on a gorgeous day on Spring Mountain at Vineyard 7 and 8, and I'm here with Wes Steffens, who is an associate winemaker and a director at a brand called Vineyard 7 and 8. He's also a founder of a brand called Correlation. And we heard to ask him a million questions. Mm-hmm. And we'll start with question number one. And that is, where were you born?
Not in California. Ah. I was born in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Jersey.
I don't have the accent.
No, you don't, which is why I have a really shocked look on my face right now. You can't see it, but I promise you. So you grew up in?
I was born in Ridgewood, New Jersey, mm-hmm. raised in Princeton, New Jersey. Uh-huh. I went to school in upstate New York and moved out to California in 2001. So I've been out here for about 18 years now.
Okay.
Maybe that's why the accent's gone.
Why'd you move to California?
Why not? Why not?
He told me, you guys.
No, I moved to California actually originally for food. After graduating undergrad, I studied an economics degree at Hobart College in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And I then, upon graduating, I went to the Culinary Institute of America because I decided to follow the love of food and wine. Mm-hmm. And as you can hear, podcasters pouring a little bit of wine because it's too nice to not have
such
some wine in our glass
sound.
Right now.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers. You'll hear a clink, my second favorite sound. Oh my.
So I went to culinary school and mm-hmm. 2 years at the Culinary Institute of America, following a love of food and wine. And that's what originally brought me to the Napa Valley. I did an internship at culinary school, or what's called an externship at culinary school, out here at the French Laundry. Mm-hmm. And upon graduating from school, I had an opportunity to come back to Napa and return to the French Laundry, where I spent probably a total of about 2 years with Thomas Keller and the team there. And that's sort of what helped me ground my roots here.
Because most people just wind up, you know, working with Thomas Keller. We're going to need to know a lot more.
Well, I mean, it started, so, and it sort of actually ties into where wine comes into this too. So mm-hmm. in 1999, well, I guess even further back, my family, my father, had always been a lover and a collector of wines. Uh-huh. And being raised in New Jersey, close proximity to Manhattan, mm-hmm. had a fair amount of introduction to food and wine and awesome culture. And so, you know, even though I was a typical, you know, youngster that thought, you know, booze and wine and alcohol was not very exciting, you know, as the older I got, the more I was around it, the more interested it sort of was, sort of just innately a part of my life. And fast forward, my father at one point was looking to sort of procure some wines for a charity event that he was doing in Manhattan for children, raising money for children with AIDS. Mm-hmm. And he was looking for a specific wine that he couldn't find anywhere, and actually found a listing in the back of Wine Spectator for this guy who had a business out in San Francisco, sort of a, you know, wine headhunter, if you will. And this guy was able to find this wine for him, and they developed a relationship over the years. And you know, my dad would buy wine for not only his personal collection, but for other events that he was doing. And over the time of their relationship, there was sort of that puppy conversation that had one day. And my dad said, "Oh, that would be fun to make a wine." And I think this guy probably maybe took him a little, maybe too seriously, and called him up and said, "Hey, Lonnie, there's a property for sale up on the top of Spring Mountain, and you should come take a look at it." And he thought the guy was a little crazy. He said, "No, you know, I'm not sure I was actually serious, but, you know, that sounds neat and all, but I can't come out, I'm too busy." My father had his primary business in finance. that kept him from being able to come out. And he says, no, you got to come out and take a look at this. If you don't, it's going to go on the market and it's not going to be for sale anymore and somebody else is going to get it. He said, well, again, I didn't necessarily say I was in the market for a wine or a vineyard, but, why don't you just send me some information and I'll take a look. So the guy sent him some information, some stats on the property, some pictures, you know, what was planted here and, you know, what the, you know, sort of the specs of the opportunity were. And I guess he decided to take a leap of faith and thought maybe this would be an interesting investment and put a bid in, but thinking more so that, hey, this would be a fun cocktail party story to tell. Hey, guess what, gang? I once bid on a vineyard in Napa Valley. But little did he know, at the end of the week, he'd get the phone call to say, congratulations, you're the proud new owner.
Wow.
So that was in 1999. So I had just started culinary school at that time, and before, and sort of between undergrad at Hobart and going to the CIA, I had said to my mom, you know, I've never been to California. I'd love to go to California. I'm getting ready to obviously go to culinary school. Maybe I could see if there's a way I could go just visit the French Laundry. You know, I wasn't going to say I need a job there. So I wrote Thomas Keller a letter and just said, hey, I'm a young, soon-to-be culinary student and interested in, I don't know if you even do this thing, but maybe I could come by and at least shake your hand and see the restaurant. And we also thought it'd be a fun opportunity to come out and see the vineyard that our family just bought. And so sort of double purpose trip. So came out, or I, a couple weeks later, I got a letter back from Thomas saying, Wesley, congratulations on going to CIA. Give my assistant a call. She'd be happy to set up a visit. So came out here, we got settled and went to meet, early morning, probably mid-morning, 10 o'clock or so, and met him in the garden. And my mom sat out front and sort of, he walked me around the property for about an hour. We sat down and had a conversation in the dining room, and then he walked me into the kitchen, introduced me to his sous chef, Eric Siebold, who was also a graduate from the Culinary Institute of America. And he said, hey, Eric, I want to introduce you to Wes. He's going to be doing his externship with us next summer. I was shocked. I mean, again, I had no intention of showing up. I didn't even at that point know what an externship was. But now I had one. So went to culinary school and had the externship and returned. And
you must have made quite an impression.
I don't know. Maybe just excited, and that was the right time, right place. He needed somebody.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Timing is everything, huh?
Timing is everything. I mean, I think that being true to yourself and true to your passion of what you're trying to do and has been important to me in my whole life. About the sort of how you develop a relationship has been important to me. And it was an interesting way to sort of kickstart my life here in the Napa Valley. You know, I think in the first 2 years, it was an incredible, sometimes painful, but in a good way, experience there. There's no question that what I learned at the French Laundry absolutely goes into everything, you know, all the decisions I make, you know, in the winery on a daily basis. You know, the two industries are they're transferable. I mean, to me, there are a lot of similarities between the two. I mean, when people ask me, hey, do you miss cooking? Well, I said, no, I don't, because I think to a certain extent what I'm doing now is a version of it. You know?
Yeah. And hospitality is at the core of it all.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? I have a sidebar question. Do you remember the bottle of wine that your dad was trying to procure for that charity event? Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, I think it was an 82 Margaux.
Yeah, that's not easy to find, even back in the 90s. Well,
especially when you needed more than a couple cases of it.
Ah, interesting. So, what was your dad's cellar like?
Was and still is probably primarily focused on great first and second growth Bordeaux's, great Burgundies. Probably not the largest selection of California wines, although I've certainly, since I've been here in California, helped him fill out that part of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He loves He loves mountain wines, which is why the guy who found this property said, you know, this is an opportunity because I know you love mountain wines and I know the style that, you know, this property could potentially bring. So stylistically, he likes a little bit of that old world, you know, that high tannin structure, that high acid, you know, very food friendly wines. And I think that's, you know, been what we've been able to work with here on this estate for many, many years.
So your palate kind of grew up in the very early years, in the early stage, on European wine. And has that continued? I know you've been introduced to, you know, a fantastic amount of California wines and probably other New World wines. But what is your relationship like with the old wines?
I'd say it's actually opposite of what it started as. I would say I've certainly part and parcel for living in the Napa Valley is you know, taste a lot of great wines from friends who are winemakers or were in the industry or just being around them, because, you know, it's, you know, you don't go to a dinner party or have a dinner party without being experienced, you know, experiencing great wines. And in most cases, in a lot of cases, they are California wines and they're young California wines. So and then being on the production side of things in this industry, you know, you're used to drinking and experiencing and even peer tasting a lot of young California wines. So I'd say my palate is probably developed more towards, you know, the California Cab. And, you know, if I'm not drinking California Cab, I'm probably drinking Syrah Grenache from Paso. I love that region. And if I'm not drinking reds, and like what's in front of us right now, I'm drinking a little Sauvignon Blanc.
2018.
Yes.
Correlation wine. Let's talk about this for a second. This is, which vintage of this wine?
2018.
Which vintage are you on from the inception? How many?
Second vintage. We started 2017 was the first time we did it. And the second time in my career, I mean, I started my career in winemaking in 2002, when I had the opportunity to get a harvest position at Harlan Estate, and was asked to come on board to help in the cellar and drag hoses and sort of help with obviously the practices and needs of crush for both the Harlan Estate team and the Bond Estates team, and was a amazing opportunity to sort of get in and cut my teeth and really come in green to the industry. And you know, of course, there the focus is, you know, Bordeaux style reds, you know, with the, you know, with the five varietals. So I spent 4 years there on that team before coming up to Vineyard 7 and 8 in sort of later part of 2006 to start or finish construction of our facility here, start putting our team together. And, you know, we grow here on the estate, we grow Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay. So for, you know, many, many years of my winemaking career, probably, so for the first 14 of what's been 16 years, had been focused solely on, or mostly on Cabernet-based wines, a little bit of Chardonnay that we grow on the estate. So it was fun for me a couple of years ago to venture for the first time outside and have the opportunity to bring in some Sauvignon Blanc. So a new venture, if you will.
Well, it smells terrific. Very feminine, very floral. Very sophisticated nose.
Thank you. It's the Muscat clone. Comes from a vineyard that we were happy to have access to up on the top of Atlas Peak. And we don't make a whole lot. We make just a few hundred cases of this. It's barrel fermented. And sees neutral oak for about 6 months, you know, and I think stylistically for all the wines that, you know, we make, you know, whether it's the Cabs, whether it's the Chardonnay, whether it's the Sauvignon Blanc, or even the Rosé that we make for Correlation Wine Company, acid is so important to me, you know, freshness, that purity, that focus of those flavors. So high tone acid, texture is really important to me in these wines. So that barrel fermentation process in this wine, I think, definitely helped.
You know, I've always thought of your wines, and I've been very spoiled to have tasted them for many, many years. Just, you have this European sensibility fused with California opulence. somehow you managed to walk that very fine line.
It helps to be in an environment where Mother Nature sort of presses that upon you. I mean, as we're sitting here right now, 2,000 feet up on the top of Spring Mountain, you know, due west of us about 30 miles is the coast.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that coastal influence. We get a lot of that, you know, just being at elevation and climate-wise, we have, you know, inherently an environment that brings higher acid to our wines. It brings a higher tannin structure to mm-hmm. our reds. You know, and then the process by which we, you know, help sort of cultivate, you know, the wines that we want from this property and even the wines that we work with for Correlation Wine Company, or the grapes that we work with for Correlation Wine Company, we sort of help to bring that texture forward. And sort of how do we sort of bring all three of those components together into what we ultimately bottle?
You've always had a very defined point of view. You've always had the vision. You modified it and adapted it, but every conversation we've had over the years pointed to the fact that you had the idea in your mind that was very prominent of what you want to accomplish. Where did that come from?
That's a good question. I mean, I think, no question, experience people I've met. I mean, go back to even the beginning of my parents. Or, my father was very, and is still, he still works, very successful in his career in Wall Street. And, you know, obviously to be what, you know, to accomplish what he has takes a tremendous amount of discipline and hard work and effort. So just being around that and the way that he also supported my brother, sister, and I into finding your own path. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was lucky that my parents never sort of pressed upon us an ideal career path that they thought was just for us. They wanted us to be happy. They wanted us to follow what we were passionate about. So thankfully, I realized pretty quickly after one summer internship at my father's company that I had sort of little interest to keep a tie on every day and crunch numbers. Even though, minus the tie, there's part of that that happens in the wine business as well.
Said business best key part.
Exactly. but at least we have wine to help support that.
Exactly.
So I think that, you know, no question that foundation of my parents supporting me and my brother and sister into doing what we do sort of started or paved the way. And then the experiences that I've been really lucky to have and the people I've been lucky to meet and work with. So, you know, you think of Harlan Estate and yeah. what Bill Harlan has created with, you know, with his projects from Harlan Estate Winery to the Bond Project to Promontory to Napa Valley Reserve, Meadowood. I mean, all of these being world-class operations that need a defined and focused vision. French Laundry, I mean, Thomas Keller has not swayed. I mean, he's been successful in opening other restaurants and, you know, the bakeries and other business ventures sort of around the country and around the world. But when it comes back to the French Laundry, he's never swayed from his vision on keeping something really small and focused and experience-driven, you know, highlighting the food, but highlighting the whole process, you know, the from the service to the relationship from the purveyors to how, you know, how a carrot is supposed to taste like. You know, it's not manipulated into something that the consumer or the diner doesn't, you know, isn't sure what it is. So, you know, to me, being around people in businesses where the founders and the proprietors were and needed to be truly focused on their vision absolutely has helped.
So we'll come back to that experiential part of it because it's really important. We'll just shove it for a moment because I wanted to highlight something for you guys. You said something very seminal very early in the conversation, which was you actually stayed true to yourself. You highlighted the importance of that trait, and clearly that comes from your family, from your upbringing. We're all from childhood, as I believe it's Saint-Exupéry once said in Little Prince, never gets old.
Yeah.
And you developed it into this really extraordinary vision, and unique and delicious, I might add. But back in the beginning, first of all, those are big names. Bill Harlan, Thomas Keller. I mean, they're not the only great chefs and vintners by far, but in the context of Napa Valley, it probably doesn't get any better. I was kind of waiting for you to say that you were offered Wine Advocate internship as well, because the only thing that's missing in that description is media. Everything else you've covered. But it's not just big names. Those are the people that are true mentors.
Yeah.
In a larger sense. And
for
the
sure.
fact that you're able to absorb it. I mean, I don't think it's a weird coincidence that those are the people that wound up in your life path. And I'm sure you've absorbed like a sponge everything, and we learn by osmosis, not just
sure.
directly. So that set you up mentally and perhaps even emotionally, philosophically. And there you were with this property that's, you know, magical doesn't begin to cover it. You guys need to figure out a way how to get here. This is almost a religious experience. So it's beautiful, but you stepping into those shoes, I mean, you've had some great mentoring and training and hands-on, but how intimidating is that to start this brand?
Oh, extremely intimidating, and still is to this day. I mean, I think that, you know, I sometimes, you know, I think with anybody that has seen some success and some and of course failures along the way, it's not, you know, to a certain extent, it being careful not to get overly satisfied with where you are, you know, obviously making sure to take time to enjoy the victories along the way, and, you know, could I do better at that? Sure. You know, but I think that the amount of work that goes into creating something and maintaining something special and truly, you know, for me and for what we're trying to do with at Vineyard 7 and 8 and Correlation Wine Company is creating brands that are, you know, like Bill Harlan and Thomas Keller, that are theirs, that they're part of their family. And so to maintain that sort of that family integrity and that vision, and obviously wanting to please, you know, obviously yourself, you know, never forget to please yourself, but make sure your family's happy with what's going on. Make sure, you know, your friends, your clients, you know, it's never ending. You know, you can't stop trying to improve and trying to continue to deliver, you know, especially in the changing atmosphere that is, you know, the wine world right now, as consumers are presented with better and better wines every day. You know, it's great, you know, from the consumer side standpoint, it's great for all of us. You know, and for those that like to drink wine, there's never been a better selection of wines out there available to us. But also on the brand standpoint, it's never been more difficult to sort of keep customers' attention. And
yeah.
Regardless of the quality that's in that bottle. So
how do you address that? How do you actually stay
in
people's
goodness.
Minds? I'm going to get to that later, but you walked into it.
The million-trillion-dollar question. I think, to a certain extent, you know, again, it goes back to what you said earlier about that vision. You know, I think you've got to stay true to what your vision is and trust your vision, because if you sway from it, and not to say that your vision doesn't transform or grow or adjust, but as long as you're staying in the sort of the original direction, it's important to, I guess, if you're not staying true to it, you're changing your identity. And so maintaining your identity, trusting your identity of what the brand is, trusting that there's a market for that identity and that vision out there. I mean, you're not marketing to the entire world. You're marketing to people that trust and believe in the story that you're telling. So finding those people that enjoy that story, and continuing to tell a new version of it every year. You know, and then, you know, how do we do that? You know, we're here at Vineyard 7-8, we're extremely lucky to have a facility that allows us the opportunity to welcome guests for private tastings. And, you know, there's a small enough team here at the property that, you know, you're with a principal. You know, it's you're getting an intimate experience that allows us to tell that story, you know, over and over, but on a personal level. You know, it's never, you know, if it's just, you know, let's say it's, you know, one couple and they're coming out from the East Coast and they want to come for a tasting, and we have a reservation for them, just because it's two people and we have space for more, we're not going to welcome more people because we want that couple to have their own experience. So, you know, trying to create a hospitality program up here that is really quaint and personal and private, you know, never having to say hello and goodbye at the same time, because that awkwardness of, you know, here you've spent, you know, a couple hours with a guest and really bringing them into your story, but how do you then end that experience by saying, oh, that's too bad, somebody else is coming in and we've got to rush you out of here, and we didn't also have the proper time to welcome this next group. So that's something that we've stayed true, and I think that is something that helps us, you know, maintain our message, maintain our sort of consistency and presentation to our mm-hmm. our wines to our guests. Certainly the adage of media, you know, and social media. I mean, we've been trying very hard to understand what platform is best for us. Mm-hmm. And to me, just like the place that we're at and the beauty that this place and wines and experiences through our wines bring, photography is really important to us. So for us, Instagram has been an important way for us to sort of have a daily dose of what our story and what life is like on the mountain.
So you guys just got a pretty neat lesson in branding, arguably digital media even. I don't know if you wanted it. I know that I'm eating it up because, I mean, it sounds remote for those of you not directly involved, but in this business, it's absolutely crucial, and you're clearly very thoughtful about it, and that's wonderful to hear.
Thank you.
And, you know, as far as kind of the bigger picture is concerned, it's really, to me, important to realize that being a vineyard owner really makes you wear so many hats.
Sure.
I mean, you just mentioned seven jobs in those few sentences. And the fact that you're able to maintain some sort of equilibrium, because you're smiling, and I know how much work
it's
it
the
is.
Line.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think as you think of any small business, you know, sort of as an entrepreneur, you know, you're sort of built to wear many hats. You know,
yeah.
There's no job that's too small. There's no job that's too big. I mean, when you first got here, I was sort of pulling my hair out a little bit. And you said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well, our email's been down all day, and so I'm putting my IT hat on, trying to fix our email server." And you know, earlier this morning, it's out in the vineyard with my vineyard crew, and But that's also the excitement, is that it, there's never, at least for me, there's never the opportunity to get stagnant in what we're doing. You know, it's sort of ever evolving and ever changing, and you know, the seasons keep changing that, the tasks that are needed on a daily basis, and whatever is the priority for the moment also dictates that.
Yeah, and again, I just want to highlight some of the important messages here. So Katy Perry sang recently at Auction Napa Valley, and she has a song. Hope I don't screw up the lyrics. Don't judge me too hard if I do, but if you stand for nothing, you fall for everything. And you spoke so well about that just a moment ago, that you have to stay true to who you are. I mean, there's different framework, different iterations as the business and the industry moves forward, but it doesn't mean that at its core, you're not true to that.
Sure.
And to that effect, again, going back to your early days, you traveled a ton, I'm sure, and you know, I have a bit as well, and the notion of Napa Valley as perceived by the world, there's always a bit of reference, sometimes jealousy, but let's talk about the good parts.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.